In the last session, I discussed the conclusion for the subject of the organization of the church, so you might wonder why there is another session. And the answer is that in the original manuscript, I had an appendix. Actually, I had two. So what I'm going to do in this session is discuss them. The first is just a study of the concept of elder. According to the New Testament, elders were to have the oversight of the church. But the concept of elder existed long before the New Testament. There were elders in the Old Testament. When they were slaves in Egypt, Israel had elders. Exodus 3:16. When Moses felt the burden of the leadership too heavy for him to bear by himself, 70 elders were appointed and granted a share of the Spirit of God. Numbers 11:16-30. Every village and city had its elders, and they met at the gate of the village or city and dispersed justice to the people. Deuteronomy 25:7. Elders became a permanent part of the nation of Israel. They were advisors to the kings, according to 1 Kings 20, and friends of the prophets in 2 Kings 6. They were colleagues of the princes in the administration of the affairs of the nation, in Ezra 10, verse 8. During the exile, they became aristocrats, part of the nobility. In the time of Christ, local Sanhedrins were composed of 23 elders. They explained the law of Moses and punished those who broke it. In Jerusalem, 70 comprised the great synagogue, including the chief priests and scribes, Luke 22:66. Elders sentenced Stephen to death in Acts chapter 6. One commentator points out, quote, "The elders were the administrators of the synagogue. They did not preach, but they saw to the good government and order of the synagogue, and they exercised discipline over its members. The elders formed a large segment of the Sanhedrin, the Supreme Court of the Jews, and they were regularly mentioned among the chief priests and the rulers and the scribes and the Pharisees. In the vision of the Revelation, in the heavenly places, there are 24 elders around the throne. It is clear that elders were woven into the very structure of Judaism, both in its civil and religious affairs." Then this author adds, again, quote, "When a man entered the eldership, no small honor is conferred upon him, for he has entered into the oldest religious office in the world, an office whose history can be traced through Christianity and Judaism for 4,000 years." End of quote. Another author said, "An elder," the word signifies one who is experienced or mature in the faith, "is a ruling leader of the church. The one unchangeable office that continued throughout the Old Testament and was perpetuated in the New Testament is leadership. In Old Testament times, whether there was a theocracy or a monarchy, there was eldership. Whether the Jews were in the land of Palestine or in exile or dispersed, there was eldership. Whether the temple was the center of worship with its many offices, or whether there was worship conducted in the synagogue, there was eldership. And the same office, with Christian modifications, continued right into the book of Acts and the epistles without the blink of an eyelash, just as smoothly as possible." Now, what I've done is just give a history of elders in the Bible. What I'd like to do next is talk about the title of spiritual leaders in the New Testament. Chronologically, the first mention of elders in the church is in Acts chapter 11. That's about 45 AD. Paul and Barnabas delivered money from the church in Antioch to the elders in the church in Jerusalem. That's also in Acts chapter 11. About the same time, 45 AD, James instructed believers to call for the elders of the church to pray for them and when they were sick. It's in James chapter 5. A few years later, 48-49 AD, Paul and Barnabas appointed elders in the newly founded churches in Galatia, Acts 14:23. In 49 AD, the apostles and the elders functioned together to resolve the controversy over the law in Acts 15. And for the next several years, 49-52, Paul, Silas, and Timothy delivered that decision to churches, according to Acts 16:4. Sometime later, 57 AD, when Paul addressed the elders at Ephesus, he used the term elder and overseer interchangeably. Acts 20, verse 17 and verse 28, in writing to the church at Philippi, 61 AD, Paul calls the leaders of the church bishops, that's the word for overseer, and deacons, Philippians 1:1. In the pastoral epistles, 1 Timothy 62 AD and Titus also 62 AD, Paul used elder and bishop and overseer interchangeably. You can see that in 1 Timothy 3:1-2 and then in 5:17-20 as well as Titus 1:5. Peter did the same thing in 63 AD in his first epistle, 1 Peter 5:1-2. In his book, Elders and Leaders, Gene Getz points out that the Romans used the title overseer to refer to the superintendent or leader of a colony. He suggested that Paul borrowed the term from the Roman culture, but totally redefined the function associated with the position. He also says, when there was a strong mixture of both Jews and Gentiles, Paul identified spiritual leaders as both elders and overseers. That, by the way, is not exactly consistent with the fact that elders were in the Old Testament. So there is a question as to whether or not Paul got the concept from the Old Testament, or, as this author says, from Roman culture. At any rate, when the church began in Jerusalem, it was led by the apostles, but it soon had elders. Thus, from the very beginning and throughout the New Testament, their churches had elders. The churches to which James wrote in 45 AD had elders, James 5. The churches Paul established on his first missionary journey in 48-49 had elders, as did the churches established on his second journey and third trip. After that, he gave Timothy the qualifications for elders and instructed Titus to appoint them. Peter and John, as I have pointed out, identified themselves as elders, not apostles. Then we need to talk about the selection. This is interesting. Paul and Barnabas appointed elders, Acts 14:23. Paul told Titus to appoint them, Titus 1:5. Apart from those two references, nothing is said in the New Testament about the selection of elders. When Paul gave Timothy and Titus instruction concerning the selection of elders, he wrote that an elder must want the position, 1 Timothy 3:1, and meet certain qualifications, 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1. In the New Testament, spiritual leaders were appointed by spiritual leaders. In a sense, it takes one to know one. With that in mind, let me address some practical questions. The New Testament provides a broad framework for elders. It does not contain a detailed plan. It is safe to assume that within the biblical framework there is freedom. If God wanted a particular, specific plan to be implemented, He would have said so. Nevertheless, godly wisdom is needed to answer some important details concerning elders. For example, how old should an elder be? Unlike the Constitution of the United States, the New Testament does not designate a specific age qualification for elder. The title elder implies an older man, but it does not designate a particular age. Paul called himself aged and used the same word in Philemon verse 9. A.T. Robertson, the great Greek scholar, said that Hippocrates called a man by this word when he was 49 to 56 years of age. Perhaps Paul had in mind someone about 50 years of age or older. Since men live longer today, maybe 60 or 65 is analogous to Paul's situation. On the other hand, Paul left Timothy in charge at Ephesus, 1 Timothy 1:3. In his book, Elders and Leaders, Gene Getz estimates that Timothy was approximately 33 when Paul left him at Ephesus to select and appoint elders. Perhaps that is why Paul told Timothy, quote, "Let no one despise your youth," in 1 Timothy 4:12. The Greek word translated youth was applied to people until they were 40 years old, according to one Greek scholar. Paul met Timothy on his second missionary journey, which was from 50 to 52 AD, and invited him to accompany him on the remainder of the trip. Timothy was probably in his 20s at the time. Paul wrote 1 Timothy in 62 AD. So when Paul speaks of Timothy's youth in 1 Timothy, Timothy was at least 30. Some say between 30 and 40, and some say probably closer to 35. And there are those who argue somewhere between 34 and 39. The point is that Timothy was not an older man when he appointed elders. While age is a factor, the critical issue is maturity. Older men without spiritual maturity were not qualified to be elders. Getz says, there is nothing more divisive than a 50 or 60-year-old man who has covered up his insecurities with control tactics. Normally, this becomes obvious when he is opinionated, defensive, and unwilling to admit mistakes. Younger men who have spiritual maturity and wisdom can apparently serve as elders. How large should a group of elders in a church be? The New Testament is silent concerning this question. From a New Testament point of view, the first and foremost issue is qualifications, quality, not quantity. Since the New Testament speaks of elders, plural, there should be at least two or three. No doubt the size of the congregation is a factor. Large churches need more elders than small churches. The number of elders in the church can be too large to function effectively. The larger the group, the more time it takes to discuss an issue. If each of 12 elders spoke for 5 minutes on a question before them, it would take an hour for just one round on one item. Also, the larger the group, the more absenteeism is a problem. The second appendix in the manuscript is entitled Pattern or Principles. The question is, do the practices in the New Testament constitute a pattern that must be adopted, or do they give principles that can be adapted? How much of the biblical practices are required for us today? Is there any freedom in this? And if so, how much? let me lay out the practices, and then you will understand the problem. Let's take meetings. The early church met in homes. Romans 16:5, 1 Corinthians 16:19. How about baptism? In the New Testament, baptism was by immersion in water. Acts 8:38 through 39. The Lord's Supper. Churches had a love feast, that is, a meal, which is evident from 1 Corinthians 11:21 and Jude verse 12. And they did it every Sunday, according to Acts 20, verse 7, when they observed the Lord's table. How about elders? Each church had a plurality of elders, as I have pointed out many times in this discussion. How about giving? In the first church, which was in Jerusalem, all the believers sold everything and gave it to the church. Look at Acts 2:44 through 45 and chapter 4 verses 32 through 35. Those are the practices in the New Testament. Meetings, baptism, the Lord's table, elders, and giving. Now, let's look at the problem that each of these presents. For example, meetings. Is meeting in homes a pattern that must be followed, or is it a principle? Don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together, which would allow a church to meet somewhere besides a home. While it is true that they met in homes, Acts 2:46, they also met in the temple, Acts 2:46, the synagogue, Acts 19:8, and even in a school. Look at Acts 19:9 and 10. So at least on the issue of where to meet, there's flexibility. How about baptism? Is baptism by immersion a pattern that must be followed? Is pouring or sprinkling acceptable? Is there another way to illustrate leaving the old life and entering into a new one? Suppose that rather than being dipped in water, the candidate publicly entered the closet in his old clothes, changed clothes, and emerged in new clothes. That was a suggestion by Dr. Ryrie. Would that do? How about the Lord's Supper? How much of the New Testament practice of the Lord's Supper is a model that must be followed? Or are there principles that are the issue? Must churches have a love feast? Must a church serve the Lord's table every Sunday? Or does as oft as you do this allow for less frequent observances, say once a month or once a quarter? They use wine in the Lord's table. Will grape juice do? And how about the issue of elders? Is having elders a pattern? Must every church have a group of men called elders? Or is the principle that a group within the church, by whatever name they are called, be responsible for certain things? Can women be a part of that group? On at least some of these issues, there is flexibility, even in the New Testament, for example, in meetings. Does that mean there is flexibility in other issues? What is the criteria for determining what is pattern, that is required, and what is principle, where there's freedom? Obviously, the individuals and the churches must decide for themselves, and not all agree on any one solution. Churches have split, and denominations have been formed over these issues. Take giving. Is the Jerusalem practice of giving the pattern that must be followed? Luke records what they did. Quote, "Now all who believed were together and had all things in common, and sold their possessions and goods and divided them among all, as anyone had need." Acts 2:44 through 45. Later, Luke relates, quote, "Now the multitude of those who believed were of one heart and one soul. Neither did anyone say that any of the things he possessed was his own, but they had all things in common. And with great power the apostles gave witness to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and great grace was upon them all. Nor was there any one among them who lacked, for all who were possessors of land or houses sold them, and brought the proceeds of the things they sold, and laid them at the apostles' feet, and they distributed to each as every one had need. Acts 4:32-35. Apparently, the Jerusalem practice was not the pattern. Still later, in the book of Acts, concerning the church at Antioch, Luke records, quote, "The disciples, each according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren dwelling in Judea." Acts 11:29. Evidently, the church at Antioch did not follow the pattern of giving used at Jerusalem. Had they given everything to the church, they would have not had anything to give. Likewise, the believers at Corinth and the believers at Galatia had money to give. Look at 1 Corinthians 16:1-3, 2 Corinthians 9:7, and Galatians 6:6. The conclusion is that even within the New Testament, not all of the practices of the church were followed as a pattern, meetings and giving. On the other hand, there is no indication in the New Testament that other practices changed, like the mode of baptism, the love feast in connection with the Lord's table, and the plurality of elders. In the case of the governance of the church, if the pattern is not followed, at least the principle is that the whole church is the ultimate human authority in a limited sense, and a group within the church governs the church, overseeing the ministry delegated to others.